Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Dead Men's Secrets when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage, and the First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. Our Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. Now, I wished I would have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, you know, our princes and politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control. But you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It does not come from our political process. It doesn't come from our politicians. It doesn't come from our lawyers or our bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair, I think, when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I'd like to repeat that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either." Because the real power in America is in our courts. It's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. That's not free. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. That is free. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, last time we were talking about atomic weapons. I told you that there were several sites around the world where we human beings, archaeologists primarily, have discovered sites where nuclear weapons have been exploded. Now, if you were traveling around in the Soviet Union or the former Soviet Union, you'd find places where they have detonated nuclear devices. And where they detonate those nuclear devices above ground, the heat is so intense that it melts the sand and turns it to glass. Now, we know in modern times that the first atomic bomb exploded was in 1945 here in the United States, down a place called Alamogordo, New Mexico. And where that first bomb went off, down on the ground, you'll see the sand fused into glass. And so when we see that, we know from looking at it, wow, there was a nuclear weapon went off here. All right, now, if we were to find those same puddles of glass in other locations in the world, what would we think about that? Well, it would tell you that if you could find the same thing someplace else, somebody else torched off a nuclear weapon. Now, if you found that in Australia, you'd say, well, is it these Aborigines that were setting off nuclear weapons? I mean, people that are still eating insects, for crying out loud, running around in loincloths? I don't think that the Aborigine people in Australia or the Stone Age people in Borneo or New Guinea have that kind of technology or have had it in the recent past, especially when we go back in sites and in places where we can be reasonably certain that we can date this for 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years ago. Now, I want you to notice that the dates in this book don't go back here millions and millions of years. It's going back a few thousand years. Furthermore, in the book, he points out that 3,000 years ago, five or six civilizations sprout up simultaneously. The Mayas, the Aztecs, the Incas, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, all of these civilizations all appear around 3000 BC. And they've got metallurgy. They've got technology. They've got aluminum. They've got metallurgy. In fact, they've got astronomy. You know, when we're talking about astronomy, I'll show you how dumb I am. I look up in the sky and I see stars. Somebody says, "Can you see the Big Dipper?" And I look up there and I say, "No." I mean, I don't see anything up there but stars. And somebody says, "Well, you know, look where I'm pointing." And he points up there. And I say, "That's the Big Dipper." And then look over there. See, there's the Little Dipper. You really got to stretch your imagination to put a bunch of stars together and call it Dipper. You know? It's a group of stars. And I guess if you stretch your imagination, you can call that the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. That's about what I can see. I can't predict when the equinox is going to occur. I've got to go to Hallmark. I've got to go to my calendar over here. I've got to go get the Farmer's Almanac to tell me when the moon's going to come up full. ancient peoples in China and Babylon and Assyria and so on, in Egypt, they were able to do that thousands of years ago. I don't know about people that stick bones through their nose. Can they predict eclipses? I can't predict an eclipse. So the people who can do that today, we call them astronomers, and we say, wow, those people are pretty smart. They need telescopes so that they can look up in the sky. They have to be able to look at the relative positions and the relative times of days and nights, and then observe that, write it down, and then come up to a conclusion that we can predict when the next eclipse is going to occur, you know, an eclipse of the moon or some eclipse of the sun. Well, people could do that thousands of years ago. These are not people running around dragging their knuckles on the ground. And people that can stick 30-ton blocks of rock up in the air and build a place called Stonehenge, those are not savages. Those are very civilized people with an advanced technology, with mathematics. Now, these civilizations have been destroyed. You know, we mentioned this in the last program, that the Egyptians were great, and they were very, very, very sophisticated, and a great civilization, but it was destroyed. What we see in Egypt today is the remnants of a great civilization, which has been overrun by a bunch of Arabs, who are virtually today, we could say, are practically uncivilized barbarians by comparison. Nobody in Egypt today is building any great pyramids. They're not building any of these great ancient cities. They're not raising, great monuments and chipping away with hammers and axes and tools and making these hieroglyphic inscriptions like they did thousands of years ago. They're dirt scrabble farmers scratching out a living, doing the best they can. Those are the survivors. And what we find here is great civilizations develop great technologies, and then it's the barbarians that come in and destroy them. Take a look at what's going on in Iraq. The greatest military power in the world is being fought to a standstill by a bunch of sand jockeys that don't even have an airplane, for crying out loud. To my knowledge, the insurgents don't have a single airplane in their air force. And every politician in America is saying, we got to get out of there. The great and mighty British Empire took on the Afghanis back in the 19th century. And then the Afghanis, these Stone Age savages, for crying out loud, threw the British out of Afghanistan. Well, they didn't exactly throw them out. They just killed enough of them. The British said, well, we've had enough, so we'll leave. Then the Russians came along. Now, the Russians, you know, were a pretty good-sized occupation force back in the 1970s. They thought, well, we'll go into Afghanistan, and we'll teach these Stone Age savages a thing or two. And they brought in helicopters, and they brought in, you know, jet airplanes, and they brought in their military with all of their sophisticated weaponry and tanks and armor and one thing and another. They were about 10 years, weren't they? About 10 years, and one day they woke up and said, okay, we've had enough. We're getting the hell out of here. Now we got the Americans over there. Got the Americans over there fighting them Afghanis. And I don't think those Afghanis over there have a helicopter, do they? I don't think they've got an airplane. I don't think they've got a helicopter. And the president the other day says, I don't know if it was a president or Condi or somebody, went over to Europe and said, hey, you guys ain't, no, it was Gates, the Secretary of Defense. He went over and said, hey, you Europeans ain't putting enough soldiers in the field out there. And those Stone Age barbarians in Afghanistan with bones in their noses are whipping the hell out of us, and we need more troops from Europe. Now, there was a time in the past, you know, when we had great civilizations. Did these great civilizations ever develop atomic weapons? Think about that. You know, think about the Tower of Babel. Think about your college education. Think about all the books that you've read. And I'm throwing out this thought to you. I've said, do you think it's possible that the Babylonians, the Egyptians, or the Chinese may have had nuclear weapons? And you know, if you're normal, you'd say, you know, Gordon, you've slipped a cog here. You've just dropped off the edge of sanity. All right. Now, let me give you some factors over here, some facts that maybe you've never heard. I never heard this either. But then I live in a very sanitized society. I get my news from Katie Couric, and Katie Couric gets her news from the AP, and the AP gets its information from around the world, we're told, and we're getting the straight skinny, just like the people in Russia got the straight skinny from Izvestia and Pravda. I've showed you over and over again here that our news is managed, our mass media is managed, and we have a political agenda, and we have a fairy tale called evolution. This is a fairy tale for adults that we've all been propagandized with, and we all believe. Now, I'm not telling you what you should believe. I'm just going to give you some facts here. The book is called Dead Men's Secrets by Jonathan Gray. Let's take a look here at the use of radioactivity. Scientists have found a number of uranium deposits that appear to have been mined or depleted anciently. Boys and girls, I've read about this, and you probably heard about it too. Up in Michigan, there is a number of copper mines up there that go back thousands of years. I told you that story from Barry Fell's America, B.C. Gloria Farley wrote a book called In Plain Sight. And you can go up there and you can see these old mines. You can see the places where they smelted copper. These are ancient mines and ancient ruins, and they're in Michigan. They're all over the northern United States, southern Canada. They're there. They're not reported by the archaeologists. They shut up about that. They're not over here telling you that there were people over here mining copper. Who was mining the copper and where were they taking it to? It wasn't the native Indians here. And then, you see, when we get to that part of the story, they shut up. They don't tell you about that. Well, in Egypt, in the tombs of the pharaohs, the pitch used to preserve corpses contained highly radioactive substances. Did you know that? Well, I didn't either. And I'd never heard that, and I'd never read about that. And I can readily understand why. After having watched Katie Couric and Brian Williams and the 6 o'clock news, I can understand why. That does not fit the theory of evolution. Because if you could go in here and show that we've got radioactivity. Now, radioactivity is something that's very, very modern. You know, this Madame Curie, you know, back about 1900 comes along and she discovers a thing called radium and does some experiments on radioactivity. I mean, hell, we're only talking about radioactivity in our modern technology over the last 100 years or so, kids. So, and needless to say, that if we could go back into the tombs of the pyramids, for crying out loud, and find radioactivity, we'd have to say, oh my God, these people must have had a technology that included uranium and radioactivity thousands of years ago. What were they using it for? What did they do with it? You know, if we can start out with radioactivity in 1890 or 1900, and 45 years later we can torch off an atomic bomb, if people had radioactivity at the Tower of Babel in 45 or 50 years, couldn't they develop an atomic bomb? And I'll tell you something else. I'm going to tell you a little story here. You might want to look at this because we got a report here from God Almighty himself. Every once in a while, the creator of the universe gives us a neat report. He reported this concerning the Tower of Babel. It's recorded here in Genesis chapter 11. The people were building this big tower over here in Iraq. We call it Iraq today. They call it Babylon Hill days. In chapter 11, it starts off, it says, the whole earth was of one language and one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime they had for mortar. And they said, go to, and let's build a city and a tower, whose top may reach into the heavens, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered upon the face of the whole earth. And the Eternal came down to see the city and the tower, and the children of men built it. And the Lord beheld, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Did you hear that? Nothing will be restrained from them that they have imagined to do. That indicates technology. This tower over here that we're talking about over here, it's got something to do with technology. And the people wanted to build this lest they be scattered upon the whole land or scattered over the whole earth. Scattered. Not civilized or unified, but rather scattered in individual tribes. That indicates that a worldwide civilization. That's what we have today, a worldwide civilization. And the powers that be want to unite this worldwide civilization under one government. Well, Nimrod had the whole world, the whole civilized world, united under one world government. And this is about 3,000, well, it's not 3,000, because the flood occurred about 2369 B.C. 2369 to 2368 is the year of the flood, near as I can reckon, based upon Ivan Panin's calculations. So when this guy uses the number about 3,000 years ago, after the flood, within a couple of hundred years, these people now, eight people have multiplied. How long does it take eight people to multiply? Well, I don't know how many children they had, and I don't know how their birth rate was, but if you take eight people, that's three women. If these three women are having a baby every two or three years, and they live for 600 years, I mean, we're talking about each one of these families over here in 100 years' time having several hundred people or several hundred babies. These people mature in about 30 years. And so, you know, you start looking at the geometric progression. It goes 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. By the time you multiply this 32 times, just to give you an illustration, you know, if you think that eight people can't produce a million or two or 5 million population in a couple 300 years, you haven't done your arithmetic. If you were to take one and double it to two, and then take two and double it to four and double it to eight, and you do that 32 times, you got 40 million. If the doubling time, and we can just pick a number over here, you know, is 30 or 40 years, if we can double every 30 years, well, we can double three times in a century, six times in two centuries. You know, in about five or six centuries, we can have several million people. And just test it. Do the arithmetic, and I think you'll be amazed. It's called geometric progression. Evidently, at the Tower of Babel, we're talking about civilization. Now, we're talking about maybe 200, 300 years, 400 years after the flood, we get to the Tower of Babel. How many people are extant? Could be several hundred thousand. Could be several million. Now, would several million people spread around the world? Because we have aluminum in Peru. Remember the last program? We got aluminum. Aluminum wasn't discovered until 1804. We weren't able to make aluminum until this century. For practical purposes, we were not able to make aluminum until the 20th century. Even though it had been discovered, you know, 100 years before, it was a novelty. They're taking up aluminum foil in Peru. They're digging up aluminum cups in Pakistan out of burial tombs. Boys and girls, aluminum is high technology. All right, so now, if we've got aluminum and we've got electricity, there isn't any doubt about what we got electricity. Hell, we got the batteries, for crying out loud, that came out of Babylon. We have electroplating in metallurgy. The last program I told you about metallurgy, I don't think I got to the electroplating. You know, if you go into a tomb and you pull out an artifact and the artifact is electroplated, you say, oh my God, these people have advanced metallurgy and they have electricity, for crying out loud. Well, how in the hell else do you get metallurgy with electroplating? And we didn't know how to do that until the last 100 years or so. And we call ourselves modern and sophisticated and advanced. So now when we talk about the use of radioactivity, the very first sentence over here, in the tombs of the pharaohs, the pitch used to preserve corpses contained high radioactive substances. The cloth used for swathing is radioactive. The burial chambers were probably full of radioactive dust. Perhaps the priests made use of this to protect the tombs from desecrators, or more likely insects and bacteria. You know, those mummies last for thousands of years. You got to get rid of the bacteria. That's what we're talking about today. We want to take our hamburger and we want to nuke it so that we can kill all the bacteria and eliminate E. coli. I mean, we're just getting to the point where we're, you know, waking up to the fact that if you want to kill bacteria, you can do it with radioactivity. And I hadn't heard this story before. But more importantly, and the significance of this is absolutely world-shaking, researchers have recently unlocked a time capsule, a number of documents buried in incomprehensible terms until our day. When translated in the last century, they were not understood, nor could they be until modern knowledge caught up with former knowledge and then was able to recognize it. These very ancient documents contain what is now startlingly familiar language. Their contents are very alarming. Now, here are eyewitness reports that raise the compelling question. Did nuclear war wipe out sections of the civilized world in the 3rd millennium BC? In ancient documents in India, dated back to 2449 BC, an Indian text recounts in detail how aircraft were used to launch a weapon that devastated three cities. The record is unnervingly similar to an eyewitness report of an atomic bomb explosion because it describes the brightness of the blast, the column of smoke rising from the blast, the fallout from the blast, intense shock waves and heat waves, the appearance of the victims, and the effects of radiation poisoning. Now, there's a document that is in our hands today from India describing the brightness of the blast, the column of rising smoke, the fallout, the intense shock waves and heat waves, the appearance of the victims, and the effects of the radiation poisoning. Who in the hell could have understood that document 100 years ago? Not until we actually saw a nuclear explosion could we have comprehended what this is talking about. Furthermore, the historical text states that an iron thunderbolt contained the power of the universe. An incandescent column of smoke and flame as bright as 10,000 suns rose in all of its splendor. Clouds roared upward. Blood-colored clouds swept down onto the earth. Fierce winds began to blow. Elephants miles away were knocked off their feet. The earth shook, scorched by the terrible violent heat of this weapon. Corpses were so burnt that they were no longer recognizable. Hair and nails fell out. Pottery broke without cause. Birds were turned white. After a few hours, all foodstuffs were infected. Thousands of war vehicles fell down on all sides. Thousands of corpses burnt to ashes. Never before have we seen such an awful weapon, and never before have we heard of such a weapon. The war zone was the upper regions of the Ganges, and passages from this ancient Sanskrit text, which is called the, and I can't pronounce this word, but I'll spell it for you, Mahabharata, Mahabharata, M-A-H-A-B-H-A-R-A-T-A, are a nerve chiller, and the cold terror of the survivor still lives in its pages. So until we started to experiment with radioactive substances, no person on earth could have described radiation sickness, for the simple reason that such a disease did not exist. And yet radiation sickness, in clinical detail, is being described here. The hair loss, vomiting, weakness, and eventual death, classic symptoms of radiation poisoning. And more significantly, it states that one could save himself by removing all metal from his person and immersing himself in the water of rivers. The reason can only be in order to wash away contaminated particles, the exact procedure that we follow today when we're submitted to or subjected to radiation fallout. So, in Babylonia, The Gilgamesh epic recounts a day when the heavens cried out, the earth bellowed an answer, lightning flashed forth, fire flamed upwards, it rained down death. The brightness vanished, the fire was extinguished, everyone who was struck by the lightning was turned to ashes. In Tibet, and in the Gobi, and in Mongolia. The Tibetan stanzas of Dzyan, Dzyan depict a holocaust engulfing two warring nations who engaged in aerial warfare, utilizing blinding rays, spheres of flame, shining darts, and lightning. The nations were the dark-faced and the yellow-faced, the Mongolians of the Gobi civilization. A few of the yellow-faced escaped the flooding and nuclear destruction, but the dark-faced appear to have been annihilated. The straight eye people of Europe and the Middle East were among the survivors, apparently having been also involved in this nuclear conflict. Mexico. Ancient Mayan texts describe the destructive effects, unfortunately quite recognizable to us after Hiroshima, of a fire from the sky that put out eyes and decomposed flesh and entrails. Great cities to the north, for example in the USA, were destroyed. Canada. Canadian Indians speak of men who flew upon the skies and had shining cities and grand homes to the south. Then an enemy nation came, and there was terrible destruction. All life in the cities was gone. Nothing but silence remained. The Hopi Indians in the southwestern United States recount that some of these of the Third World flew in a great city, or to a great city, attacked it, and returned so quickly that the inhabitants did not know where their attackers came from. Soon, many nations flew to attack one another, so corruption and destruction came. Physical evidence. In Gabon, West Africa, there are remains of a prehistoric nuclear chain reaction that cannot be explained by natural means. Discovered down a mine, the remains appear to be residue from an artificially produced pre-flood nuclear reaction. India. There are Indian remains which strongly suggest that an atomic war was waged in the distant past. Precisely in the region specified in the old records, that is between the Ganges and the Rajamahal, R-A-J-A-M-A-H-A-L, Rajamahal Mountains, there are numerous charred ruins which have yet to be explored. Indications are that these ruins were not burned by ordinary fire. In many instances, they appear as huge masses fused together with deeply pitted surfaces, like tin struck by a stream of molten steel. Further south, in jungle-claimed areas of the Deccan, are more such ruins. The walls have been glazed, corroded, and split by tremendous heat. In some buildings, even the surfaces of the stone furniture have been vitrified, that is, melted and then crystallized. In the same region, a human skeleton was found with radioactivity 50 times that of the surrounding normal level. Now, no natural burning flame or volcanic eruption could have produced such intense heat, or the heat intense enough for this. The heat of millions of degrees, that of thermonuclear reactions, is necessary. I've got to give you a reminder here before we go on with nuclear war in ancient times, which sounds kind of preposterous, but stick around. There's more to come. Let me remind you here that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school here at 417-273-4967 and ordering it. We don't want to send it to people that don't want it. Don't want to tell you something you don't want to hear. But if you'd like to hear more, then send for that free CD package. It didn't cost you anything. Number to call, 417-273-4967. All right, now the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine alone. Don't blame anybody else. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book called Dead Men's Secrets, 969 physical records, sites, locations, pyramids, mine shafts, aluminum cups, electric batteries, the physical stuff that for the most part is hidden away. Now, it's not all hidden away. I didn't know there was 969 physical locations around the world where you could visit this stuff. I probably heard of 10, maybe 15. I heard of the Nazca Plateau down in Peru, and I heard of the city under the ocean down in Bimini. I could probably tell you 10 or 15 sites of these ancient, unanswerable technologies. And I was pretty well convinced that there was something to the Tower of Babel, something to the statements in the Bible, which tell us that they were artificers in brass and iron. I never dreamed that there was this much evidence. I just never thought about it, never thought that there was that much out there. I'd seen 10 or 15. It was enough to convince me, but this guy is so overwhelming that you can't grasp it all. There is absolute proof. I mean, it's right there in front of your eyeballs, and it doesn't take a genius to figure it out. And so I'm telling you about the nuclear bomb war in ancient times. Now, it sounds kind of preposterous, but like I said before, just think about it. And you go down here to Alamogordo, New Mexico, where they set off the first atomic bomb, and you look at the ground, and you're going to see a great big pool of glass there. Now, based upon history and based upon what we know and the records, we can all see that this is the results of tremendous heat from a nuclear weapon, which explodes and melts the sand together and forms glass. So when you see that someplace else in the world, then that ought to tell you a little something about, oh, well, that looks kind of like nuclear activity here. And when you take a look in the tombs of the Egyptians and you find radioactivity. Now, I never heard that reported before, because radioactivity was first discovered by a lady by the name of Madame Curie. She may not have been the very first one, but she was right in there. And she did a lot of experiments with radium and radiation, one thing and another. And so the science got launched around 1900 by Madame Curie, on round numbers. In less than 50 years from 1900, we got a nuclear weapon. 45 years later, we got a nuclear weapon. Now, if the Egyptians had radiation, if they had radioactive elements, it shouldn't have taken them more than 50 or 75 or 100 years, give them a little time, to develop a nuclear weapon. Now, right away, somebody's going to say, well, there'd be records of it. There were, and they were destroyed by a number of events, like the Library of Alexandria. I reported that to you last time. And the great libraries around the world have been destroyed by the barbarians. And I want to point out that these great civilizations, like the United States of America, the British Empire, has collapsed in front of your eyeballs. America's about to go next. We're already being overrun by barbarians in Afghanistan and Iraq. We've got the most sophisticated weapons that money can buy in Iraq. Iran will be next. Just stand by for the encore. And here are these barbarians running around out here in the desert, for crying out loud, fought us to a standstill, and we've got a helicopter. And they're about to defeat us. So, you can sit there with all your nuclear weapons. How good are they? The great Roman Empire was overrun by the barbarians. They weren't destroyed by some technologically superior force from China or someplace. They were destroyed by a bunch of loincloth barbarians. That's what's happening in America. We're not being destroyed over here. We're being destroyed on the other side of the world. Now, our economy is about to collapse, and America will go the way of the Egyptians and the Romans and the Greeks and the Babylonians and the Syrians and everybody else that's ever gone before us. We haven't learned anything from the histories of the past, and there isn't any reason why our future won't be just about the same as the great civilizations of the past. Now, over in Pakistan, skeletons in the Mohenjo-Daro, that's spelled M-O-H-E-N-J-O hyphen D-A-R-O. Now, if you're a Pakistani and I murdered that pronunciation, bear with me. I've been dumbed down by my public schools. And Harappa, H-A-R-A-P-P-A, are extremely radioactive. All right, now hang on here, kids. We go over to Pakistan and we find skeletons, and they're extremely radioactive. Where in the hell did the radiation come from? All right, now listen to this. The ruins of these ancient Indus Valley cities are immense. They are thought to have contained well over 1 million people each. Practically nothing is known of their histories except that both were destroyed suddenly. In the Mohenjo-Daro, in an epicenter 150 feet wide, everything was crystallized, fused, or melted. 180 feet from the center, the bricks are melted on one side, indicating a blast. Ancient Indian texts speak of a city's people being given 7 days to get out, a clear warning of total destruction. Excavations down to the street level revealed 44 scattered skeletons, as if doom had come so suddenly they could not get into their houses. All the skeletons were flattened to the ground. A father, mother, and child were found flattened in the street, face down and still holding hands. The skeletons, after thousands of years, are still among the most radioactive that have ever been found, on a par with those of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. When did you hear about that when you went to college? I didn't either. I didn't go to college, but you'd have thought that that should have been reported, you know, in National Geographic, or Reader's Digest, or on the History Channel, or on Discovery. Now, once in a while, I can't find too much fault with History and Discovery. Once in a while, they'll put on one of these kinds of exposés, and then they just kind of back off and say, well, it's one of those unexplained mysteries that we'll just have to look into in the future. And then they go on to something else. And then there's one, and then you'll hear another one, and then there's another one. And they're so disconnected that you can never connect the dots. You never put this together. I never heard about these radioactive skeletons. Hell, if they're radioactive, that tells you somebody had radioactivity there. When was that? Did that occur sometime after Hiroshima and Nagasaki? I never heard of any bombings going on in India, have you? Since World War II? All right, so we're digging this out. Archaeologists are digging these out. Now, somebody should have reported this. And indeed, somebody did. And then somebody buried the report. That's the thing that is so frustrating. And kind of bends your mind around a little bit, and you say, what the hell is all that about? It doesn't fit with the theory of evolution. These are ancient cities. They go back thousands of years. If mankind had nuclear weapons, nuclear technology thousands of years ago, then he was smarter thousands of years ago and got real dumb over a long period of time and is now just recovering from his terminal dumbs. That's what it tells you. Hell, that don't fit with evolution. So it's politically incorrect, and it's academically incorrect, and we're not going to report it. So we're going to bury it. We're going to hide it. Just like that 14-foot skeleton that used to be up there in Chicago. Disappeared. But there's more. Iraq. Melted ruins of a ziggurat structure not far from the ancient, or from ancient Babylon, appears as though fire had struck the tower and split it down to the very foundation. Brickwork was changed to a vitrified state, completely molten. The whole ruin is like a burnt mountain. Even large boulders found in the vicinity of the ruins have been vitrified. What power could have melted the bricks? Nothing but a monster thunderbolt or an atom bomb. Now here's something else. Did you know that when the first atomic bomb exploded in New Mexico, the desert sand turned to fused green glass? Listen, in Babylonia, in 1947, archaeologists on one site uncovered in succession a layer of agrarian culture, an older layer of herdsman culture, a still older layer of caveman culture, and then they reached another layer of fused green glass. Huh? Hey, I never heard that story. If somebody would have told me 40 or 50 years ago, hey, Gordon, did you know that over in Babylon, they found fused green glass in an archaeological ruin, just like they found at Alamogordo, New Mexico, after they set off the first nuclear weapon? I would have said, wow, that means a long time ago someone had nuclear weapons. That means a long time ago they must have had advanced technology. Hey, boys and girls, before you invent nuclear weapons, you got to have some civilization to go along with it for organization, political stability, electricity, and turret lays with metallurgy. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more that goes with it. And the more advanced the civilization becomes, you know, we didn't have computers back in 1900 with which to develop skyscrapers. First of all, we had to develop the skyscrapers and the building and engineering technology with slide rules. As time progressed, we got electricity. As time progressed, the electricity turned into machine tools. As machine tools developed, we turned into greater and greater technologies like plastics. Plastics then turned into microtechnologies. Then the microtechnologies turned into electronics technologies, and the electronics technologies turned into computer technologies and so on. You know, start with computers. Computers are up the food chain quite a ways. Now, they tell us that over the next 15 years, knowledge should double again. That's pretty darn shocking, I'd say. Now, knowledge has been accumulating pretty rapidly. Take a look back here 100 years in 1900. You know, we were pretty good guys. We had electricity, and we had machines, and we had streetcars, and one thing and another. Now, take a look at 100 years later. Quantum leaps forward. I mean, if you compare American civilization today with 100 years ago, I mean, you know, it's like those poor jerks back there in 1900 were running around in loincloths by comparison, with bones sticking through their nose. All right, now, let's picture 100 years into the future, assuming we could get another 100 years into the future. Knowledge is coming to us exponentially, and we're learning more faster every day. And that's because we got better means for research, better means for developing more and more technology. All right, now, lightning may occasionally fuse sand, but when it does, the fusing occurs in a distinctive root-like pattern. Only a nuclear explosion could produce an entire layer, a whole stratum, of fused green glass. In the Gobi Desert in Mongolia, the desert surface of the Gobi near Lob Nor Lake is covered with vitreous sand from Red China's atomic tests. But the desert has certain areas of similar glassy sand, which have been present for thousands of years. There are ruins, almost formless, which bear the marks of blistering by enormous heat. It is indeed difficult to believe that once men lived, loved, ruled, and died here. In Israel, in 1952, archaeologists unearthed at the 16-foot level a layer of fused green glass, 1/4 inch thick and covering an area of several hundred square feet. It was made of fused quartz and similar in appearance to sand at the atomic test sites of Nevada and the Gobi. South central Turkey, at Katil Hayyuk, archaeologists came upon thick layers of burned brick at the VLA level. Oh, maybe that's the 6A level, and they put it in Roman numerals. That's probably what it is. At the 6A level, the blocks had been fused together by heat so intense that it had penetrated more than 3 feet below floor level, where it had carbonized the earth, skeletons and burial gifts that had been interred with them. The enormous heat had halted all bacterial decay. North Syria. So completely were the royal buildings burned at at A-L-A-L-A-K-H. If I spoke Arabic, I'd probably do better. A-L-A-L-A-K-H. That wall plaster was vitrified, and in some areas, basalt wall slabs had actually melted. Got that? Now notice that that there's numerous of these locations. Pakistan, Iraq, China, the Gobi Desert, Babylonia, Israel, South Central Turkey, North Syria. Let's take a look at the Southern Sahara Desert. Here's another green glass nuclear site. Albion W. Hart, an engineering graduate from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, while traversing a desert in the interior of Africa, was puzzled by a large expanse of greenish glass which covered the sands as far as he could see. Not until 50 years later, when he passed the White Sands area after the first atomic test there, did he recognize the same type of silica fusion. Egypt. Fused green glass has been found also in sites of the Old and Middle Kingdoms of Egypt, in the Lofoten Islands off Norway, Scotland, Ireland, and in the Canary Islands. Prehistoric forts and towers in Europe have had their walls vitrified and stones fused by an unknown energy source, usually along their western wall, but sometimes on the inner sides of the eastern wall as well. So intense was the heat. Many sites show melting to a depth of 1 foot, turned to glass. The Isle of Man, the stones of the innermost cell of a long narrow barrow, near Moghold, were in like manner fused together. In the Western Pacific, similar vitrifications have been observed in the Western Pacific. In Peru, at Cuzco, an area of 18,000 square yards of mountain rock has been fused and crystallized. Likewise, a number of the dressed granite blocks of the nearby Sacsahuaman Fortress have been vitrified through intense radiated heat. In Brazil, the ruins of Seven Cities. I don't know why they spelled it in some other language here, but they did. The ruins of Seven Cities in the province of Piauí, a monstrous chaos, having been melted through extremely high energies. Squashed between the stone layers protrude pieces of rusting metal that have streaks like red tears down the crystallized wall surface. Here in the United States, in the western United States, ruins exist in Southern California, Colorado, Arizona, and Nevada, in which the radiated heat was so intense as to liquefy the rock surface. Between the Gila and the San Juan Rivers, a huge region is covered with remains, ruins of cities, burnt out and vitrified in part, full of fused stones and craters caused by fires, which were hot enough to liquefy the rock and metal. There are paving stones and houses torn with monstrous cracks in the center of a ruined city in Death Valley, California, with lines of streets a mile long and positions of buildings still visible, stands an enormous structure on a tall rock. The southern side of the rock and building has been melted and vitrified, and in the Mojave Desert exist several circular patches of fused glass. Hey, boys and girls, we're not talking about one or two places in the world where we find this nuclear evidence. It's all over the place. It's on Easter Island. It's in the United States, the Isle of Man, the Western Pacific, Brazil, Peru, Egypt, Scotland, the Lofoten Islands off Norway, Ireland, the Canary Islands, South Central Turkey, Israel, the Gobi Desert, China, Syria, the Sahara, Babylonia, Iraq, Pakistan. Come on. Africa. We're talking about a worldwide civilization, with multiple groups of people, probably nations, or at least ethnic groups, who have nuclear weapons, which culminated in a nuclear war. You know, scientists, they tell us today, you know, in the event that we go into a full-fledged nuclear war, the survivors will be reduced to barbarians. Hell, it looks like it's already happened, at least once. And the clue comes from Genesis 11. God told us, he said, you know, nothing's going to be withheld from these people. These people have technology. I forgot who it was now. I think it was old Albert Einstein. He said, I don't know what weapons will be used in the future, but I know that if nuclear weapons are used in the next world war, I guess somebody asked him, what kind of weapons do you think are going to be used in World War III? He said, well, I don't know what they're going to use in World War III, but from what it looks like here, the weapons that will be used in World War IV are going to be sticks and stones. And that's what happened. Civilizations, great technological civilizations, like the United States of America, once it's destroyed, the barbarians will come in here, they will burn the libraries. And the knowledge of computers and nuclear weapons and technology as we know it today will be destroyed. If the Stone Age people of Borneo or New Guinea were to gain power in the United States of America, there's little doubt in my mind, but the first thing they'd do, if they got into the Smithsonian Institute, or if they got into the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or any places of learning, they would burn it and destroy it. That's the history of what happened in the Roman times and in ancient times. They are the great destroyers. They are not the great civilizations. Hey, I'm out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll conclude this next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But let me remind you that you're listening, or have been listening, to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Okay, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.